This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be.
Indies and International. I'm Pete, and I'm joined by Timothy. Timothy, what's going on, my friend?
Oh, same old, same old. Just had a nice trip going around in San Francisco Bay Area, checking out some cool breweries and stuff like that. And then back in town, heading out to Rise next weekend. Looking forward to that. Went ahead and bought my tickets when I saw the lineup was looking pretty good, so I had to figured I had to go to the show. Got Dahlia Doom coming through there, defending the title in a cage match, so that's pretty cool. Tony Storm, I think, defending a Stardom championship against Mercedes Martinez, so I'm excited for that one. They got a Jimmy Jacobs team taking on a Taya Valkyrie team in a four-way or like an eight-person tag or whatever, so... Yeah, I'm going to go get back into checking out some live wrestling. Got Nicole Savoy on the show. So, just getting back into it. How you been, Pete?
Doing pretty good, pretty good. I was supposed to go to the Wrestle Circus show that got canceled, so kind of have no idea what's going on there. So I have tickets. I'm going to the IWHE show in December, I believe it's 17th. And... man, it's a pretty fun show. It has Martin Stone versus Chip Day on top. It's here in Fort Worth, Texas. It has Gary J wrestling. What's his name? Oh gosh, I can't believe I'm drawing a blank right now. That guy we liked who worked at Inspire show. Everett Connors, I think his name, right?
Oh yeah, that was him.
The good mat worker.
Yeah.
And a lot of other stuff. So I'm pretty excited about that show. I hope they do really well. It's cool of them bringing in different types of talent that don't normally work Texas, like Chip Day and Martin Stone. So I think that's pretty cool and stuff. It seems pretty funny how everyone seems in an uproar about the Starrcade show not getting aired on the. On the network and stuff. I mean, it all boils down to people is money. I mean, they want to make their goal is to make money, and that stuff is expensive to show the house show. Would it have drawn more people? Would people have subscribed just to see the Starrcade house show? I don't really think so. I mean, so for a business sense, I'd have to say WWE made the right decision. Would I wanted to see it? Of course. It sounded like a great nostalgia show. They treated their legends well. Unlike a lot of times on TV, they make them look like crap. But here, they actually honored their legends, had them look good. You saw the gif about the Arn Anderson spine buster. They looked fantastic. Flair makes an appearance. Steamboat putting over Nakamura. The Rock and Roll Express doing an angle with New Day and Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy. I mean, it just sounded like a lot of fun and a couple cage matches. Sounded like the show was a real blast live to be there. I wish that's the other option. You could have flown out there, bought a ticket, and got it. I mean, but again, it all boils down to the fact. I think a lot of what we're seeing now with the network. Is they're realizing what drives it. They're cutting down their pay-per-views from, I don't know how many they ran last year, but I would hazard a guess it was like 22 pay-per-views last year. They're cutting it down to 14 this year because they realize the big shows is what draws the buys, draws the network on numbers. It's the current product what drives it. Anything they put up on there isn't going to change the numbers. I'm glad they're putting up more old school footage as an old school wrestling fan, but that's not something that drives the numbers either. But it's something I'm glad they're doing because it's something they have and something they could put up there without having to do first run stuff. And they've tried their first run stuff, and a lot of it was garbage, and it cost too much that it wasn't drawing money for them. And the bottom line, I think they finally realized, is the current product is what's going to draw the numbers on people buying the network, and because they didn't average, because they didn't feel like that Starrcade was going to draw extra buys. Maybe if they did it a pay-per-view called Starrcade and put it on there, maybe that might bring back some of the Crockett fans. I don't know, but I don't think showing this house show was truly going to do it. Do you have any thoughts about them airing the Starrcade show?
I think there's no point to it. I think it's interesting too, because we're going to talk about the takeover, but the same thing. I think there was a lot of communication on whether or not the Gargano versus Pete Dunne match was going to end up being screened anywhere, and a lot of matches where they're talking about where are they showing up. And I think that intrigue, that excitement, the Starrcade as well, I think is just going to translate to more and more people being interested in trying to go to the live shows. And I think that's what WWE needs to focus on. And I was, I don't know what I was listening to the other day, but they were talking about the difference between TV in the past and TV now, is that people were paid really shitty for their TV, and the wrestling wasn't paid very well for the TV. The wrestlers weren't paid very well for the TV, the companies, because that was just advertisement to get people down to the shows. And it almost seems with the business in the downturn that it has been for a while, they might be needing to go back to that. Kind of the focus on ratings and television and all this really did kind of start from the Monday Night Wars with the Nitro and all that. So maybe this is just a natural correction for wrestling, and too many people are getting the FOMO and they're too excited about being able to see everything, but it might be time to dial it back somewhat, get more people excited about going to regional shows. I think the Powerbomb TV model, while I'll admit it, I'm somewhat guilty of wanting to see every show and being upset that they don't automatically upload everything that I could ever want, might be the right model, as they're, you know, they adding in different companies. They're not putting the entire back catalog up. They're not putting all the brand new shows up instantly. They're kind of slowly putting stuff out. They're building two new stuff. So, I mean, maybe that's just, it's just time for kind of a course correction in wrestling fandom overall. I don't think that putting Starrcade on the network would have made a difference for buys. I don't think that it's this big deal that everyone should be getting up in arms that they can't watch it. I think that more and more people need to just start accepting that they need to go to the shows. Try to go to more wrestling live, the kind of the way that it's expected. You're going to have a better time, and you're going to, you know, have a little bit more of a personal interaction and experience with people.
And I know it's kind of it's crazy to ask people to fly out to a house show. I mean, I totally understand that. But you know, that's the whole thing. That's why it's called a house show. It was for that market. It was for the Carolinas, which grew up on Starrcade. But I know the company ended up going national, so they got a lot of fans national wise. But I mean, yeah. But you know what? I think maybe it's one of those things. I mean, that's why. I mean, there was a winner in this war, and that's the bad thing about having a winner in a war is that it dictates what we're going to see. And honestly, the only reason this probably show ever happened, and I think Triple H as a wrestler is one of the worst things on TV, and it's bad for the company and all this, but he has the reason, like, Ric Flair is honored in the WWF as how big as he was is because Hunter was a huge fan growing up. Hunter was an NWA guy. He was a fan of the NWA. He was obviously the guy who brought back War Games. It wasn't Vince. I think Hunter had a lot to do with this house show. And that's what it is. But again, it's what people are going to buy. They're focused on their live events or with NXT and the WWE, and the bottom line is, it's what you do with your thing. Is if you don't like the way WWE is going, then you shouldn't have the network, and that's how you got to do it. Because bottom line, it's the live. It's what the current chasm of what the wrestling is what's going to draw the numbers on the WWE. And you know, comparing to Powerbomb, it's not even fair, because I mean, Powerbomb is such a total. It's a niche of a niche. thing. And I mean, and what it does a great job for the niche fans, which are me or you and a lot of other people. But it's not like what the WWE Network is. It's just for what a lot of people think what wrestling is WWE style. And that's the only style they're used to and what they see. And there's a reason why the network, a lot of it, why they, that's, I think they're part of the reason why they didn't upload so many stuff of the old school is they didn't want to give you even that option. But now I feel like they realize they got to have footage. They got to have stuff on there. It is a network about wrestling, and they have all the libraries for the most part. Might as well put them up there. And that's why we have that instead of like Table for Three. I just got canceled. We've seen even good shows. Like, I thought Table of Three was fun. The JBL show, I thought I enjoyed that. That got canceled. There was garbage that we haven't had since Legends House. I mean, that was entertaining enough, but it was definitely not must-see TV. You had Swerved. Is that really all that great of a show? I mean, the Jerry Springer show lasted a little bit here and there. They're getting away from the Edge and Christian show lasted one season because it cost so much money to produce. And it's not, I mean, yeah, they always point, a lot of people point to numbers, but look, it was like the fifth highest rated show on the network. But because the network doesn't have much, not much, it might be the fifth rated, but the pay-per-view is what's going to be the number one rated show. And by that much, and it's going to be probably by like 8 billion times more eyeballs on it than the fifth rated show on the network. So again, it all goes back to the current product on what's going to get people to buy stuff. And I'm sorry if people are upset about not being able to see the Starrcade show. Of course, I would have loved to seen it. But that's life. And I mean, if people are, keep on tweeting Meltzer, why didn't they do this? It's a monetary thing, you guys. I mean, it's almost like sometimes wrestling fans have never been, they're not on a budget. Do you have to, instead of buying a ribeye, you have $5 in your bank account, you buy a frozen pizza. There's a reason why, okay? It's a budget. It's all budgetary things. And the WWE, yeah, they make a lot of money, but they don't have this infinite. They make a lot of money because they know how to spend and where to make the impact and how to work on a budget. Every business has a budget, and I'm almost like embarrassed that wrestling fans somehow don't know that everyone lives on a budget. So does the WWE, and their budget didn't include putting Starrcade on their network. Do you understand where I'm coming from on this? Especially on the budget, Tim? Isn't that like,
yeah.
To me, I find it, I'm sure you understand. That's a stupid question. But don't you find that really insulting? Like, why didn't they put it on there? Like that was like, because they could, you know? I don't, wrestling fans don't sometimes understand. I mean, it's not all about pleasing you or pleasing the master. I mean, they have a budget, and this stuff costs money to put on the air.
I think a lot of people don't have a concept of, you know, what is really involved in it, like that it would cost money to produce that show, that it's not something that you can just pop up for free, that that it, you know, it's more work, and that they're like a kind of a niche part of the market. The people who care about seeing that, I think, don't have any concept of the fact that them and the other people who care so much about seeing it are not a big part of the kind of the crowd that watches WWE, like you talked about. The big thing is the current product and what that people want to, you know, people want to watch what's going on live now. And that's why Monday Night Raw gets more viewers than the network has subscribers, because that's what people care about more than seeing every little house show and all this stuff. I mean, we had some conversations talking about the idea of, is Cena the top draw in the world? And while Meltzer's kind of argument that, you know, Cena couldn't draw 1,500 extra people to an ROH show is laughable and ridiculous, it falls into my same kind of argument for why I can understand the sentiment that Meltzer is making there, which is, I think there's a lot of WWE fans that if you told them, hey, do you want to watch this Steadicam of a house show, would be like, fuck no, I don't want to watch that shit. It looks like crap. It looks low rent, and it's just going to kind of diminish the overall value of WWE because you're putting out this one thing that has this terrible production value. And I think that people don't realize that a lot of people look at it that way because they don't care. They don't mind watching hand cams off of YouTube, but there's people who, the reason why they pay attention to WWE is because of being the most polished and well-produced show, and they're not going to watch it if it's not the most polished and well-produced show that it is.
And that's what happened. That was one of the main reasons why WWE, WWF ended up winning the war, was because it was the more polished product compared to NWA, compared to Memphis, compared to all these studio shows. They were taking out, going to big arenas, had better production values, and made it seem like it was the big deal. It made it seem like it was Coke versus RC Cola, if you will, in a way. And that's what it is. And everybody has masters they got to answer to. They have a budget. And if they didn't think this was going to draw them a significant WWE, for the most part, they do things to make money. Very rarely are they just doing things to please the fans. Yes, if they are able to please the fans and make money, that's win-win for them. But ultimately, they're in the game of making money. And at this point in time, putting Starrcade on the network was not going to draw them it wasn't going to draw them a significant amount of fans to counteract the money they're going to put on there. I just find it interesting all about the network models and stuff like that and things going around. What kind of drew you into being, because you seem like more of an indie guy. You prefer a smaller house. Is it the actual being up close and personal with the wrestlers, or what is it that drives you away from the WWE model?
Yeah, I think it's a mix. It's, you know, for me, it's more bang for your buck. It's kind of the live experience that I'm used to from coming out of like DIY punk scene type shows. So for me, like, that was always the thing. It's, I'm going to get to go see, you know, performers who, you know, aren't this like big over the top thing, you know, especially like I said, starting out with music, stuff like that. You go see a bunch of bands play for cheap or free at a local spot. They're up close. You're getting to see the passion, and it kind of translated to wrestling the same thing. It felt like too homogenized, too clean, too sterile. So for me, when I started to find out, you know, there's independent wrestling shows and there's local independent wrestling shows, and another part of it too is I've never been invested in WWE. So when WCW went out of business, ECW went out of business, for me it was like, well, I'm not going to just now start being a big time WWE person because I just don't have that connection. So going to WWE shows was never anything that I was super excited about. I did go to a few WCW pay-per-views in the 90s, and I enjoyed it. They're the big shows, but looking back at it now, yeah, I mean, their guys are miles away. You can't really see what's going on. It's kind of difficult to deal with, kind of traversing the whole situation. The ticket prices are inflated to pay for this gigantic overhead. And like I said, I just feel like you get more bang for your buck. You get to appreciate people who are very passionate about what they're doing. And it just always was kind of what screamed to me, not just, like I said, not just in wrestling, but in all different kinds of different forms of performance. That's always just worked better for me to go to the smaller venue kind of thing.
Cool. Well, I was just wondering your take on that. Were you a WCW guy growing up in the 90s?
Yeah, even before, realistically, I mean, you know, I was born in the mid-80s, so for me, I didn't have a lot of time to watch wrestling before the 90s, but I did watch some because, you know, I got into it from my grandmother. She was from the South. She was already into NWA, Crockett, stuff like that. So she had tapes and would put on WCW Saturday Night and stuff like that when I would be over. Would watch old tapes when I was young, and that kind of what got me started. So for me, it was WCW. Eventually, I saw Bret Hart, and I liked him, so I would watch some WWF. Around the time that he was, you know, I think his first championship run. So I was kind of into that. And then that was kind of my idea of WWF. And then he leaves WWF to go to WCW, and I was kind of like, oh, you know, so that's the guy that I cared about over there, so why am I going to keep going? But then the Stone Cold was big, and he's interesting, and The Rock, and there's a lot of other stuff, so I would pay attention to WWF, but for me, it was more about WCW, honestly, even from when I was a little kid. ECW I found out about pretty early on as well, got into that and was checking it out all the time, so that was kind of my mix. It was that I liked WCW for some of the action. I liked ECW for the wild, crazy stuff that was going on. And WWE just felt like it didn't serve either of those masters super well. I mean, the crazy out of left field angles were always done in a way that were a little bit more, I hate to say sleazy, but they kind of felt that way. But also like with a veneer of like, oh, this is all a performance. And then the wrestling wasn't at the same level as some of the stuff in WCW, especially with the cruiserweights at the time. So I was kind of like, well, this is good for what it is, but it's not the best at either of those things, so I'm not really going to pay attention to it.
Okay, that's fair enough. Hey, well, let me transition to some of the shows we watched this week. We watched two CWF. We watched the CWF TV, and then we had the CWF Ultimate Survivor. And then we watched the NXT TakeOver special, War Games, from Houston. Let's talk about the CWF TV. And it opens up with the Sandwich God versus Otto Swans and Mike Mars. What were your thoughts here?
I liked the pairing. I liked the commentary putting over the Otto Swans-Mike Mars pairing, kind of being a, I don't know, May-December kind of a team. With you've got Otto Swans could possibly be the mentor for Mars as a big unruly beast of a man that he is. Swans could maybe hone those skills. So I like that being put over. Sandwich Squad are really good as the big monsters, ass kickers, but they can sell, especially when they're getting, you know, underhanded tactics and cheating coming from the heel team here works well. Like the finish, getting involved with everyone in the All-Stars, Coach getting the distraction, Kerry loading the face guard to set up for Mars to actually be the one who gets the pin on Mecha Mercenary there, I thought was really good. Like I said, I think a really nice way to put it together. But I hope that they keep Mars away from officially being an all-star, but I would like the idea of him and Swans, as Swans kind of being his mentor without Mars necessarily being an all-star. I think that could be a nice kind of interesting character dynamic between the groups and between the whole setting. Sandwich Squad in a position to kind of help put to put Mars over. I think this whole thing was kind of about showcasing Mars, but Sandwich Squad don't lose anything coming out of it because, you know, they got fucked over with the loaded face mask, so they look good coming out of it either way. I mean, at this point, it's funny. I think Sandwich Squad are pretty golden act in CWF. It would take a lot, I think, to ruin their overness with the crowd because everyone just really loves them.
Yeah, I was getting nervous because they've been losing a lot on TV. That, man, are they going to break them up and stuff? But then they had the big win on the TV, on the Ultimate Survivor, on the week comeback. So I'm like, oh, they probably can't. I don't know. But they've been, whenever I see people lose a lot, especially good acts, start losing a lot, I start getting a little nervous. But I still think, I think we're fine. I really enjoyed Cecil on commentary where he's still pissed that he's working Thanksgiving. And as a retail guy, I can totally get that problem. I love Mecha's double forearms. They look great. We got a pretty nice little hoss fight out of this tag match. And I'm with you. I love the finish of the loading up of Otto's mask. Otto's a weird cat, and I'm really – he's one of those guilty pleasures where I'm really, really digging his work. What I'm really digging more is his character. He just stands out. He has this unique charisma. I don't know what it is about him, but you just can't turn away from him. It's really weird, and he's a guy who's been in this business for a long time. And I'm really captivated by him right now. And then we get these All Stars promo, which is pretty solid stuff. Setting up, going after CL Party for Ultimate Survivor coming up. What were your thoughts here?
Similar, decent promo. Good stuff coming out of this for the most part. I think I'm excited for the Ultimate Survivor. It felt a little anticlimactic. Kerry's team is really just the All Stars. You know, they just list it. There's no big surprises, but I guess it's what you expect from them. So, I'm at this point, I'm like pretty excited for the Ultimate Survivor match coming up, and I like the stipulations and the matchup and everything about it. I think the All-Stars just kind of have a really good ragtag group dynamic to them that makes you kind of, like, you could almost find them endearing if they weren't so annoying, so it really works in that regard. I don't think that they get baby-faced ever. They're just yeah, like, pretty annoying.
What's up, Royal, man? That guy's he's so charismatic. I mean, he just, he, like, out-charismas everybody on the group, and it's not a bad thing, because the group's a heel, but yeah, but Royal is so freaking good. Then we got Jesse Adler versus Dirty Daddy. I enjoy this as a babyface match. I'm still loving Andrews for TV champ thing coming out. We have the fun babyface match. Daddy throws a nasty looking clothesline. Daddy's flying boot also looked nasty. Just a good solid TV match, and I thought this was good. You can see these guys feuding down the week, having another match down the road. I liked Eric Andrews being out there with his TV champ gimmick going. Overall, fun stuff. What you make of it?
I thought that it was interesting because Adler came out without the belt. I didn't know what was up with that. Like, if this was filmed out of order or something weird like that. I agree with you. I think that Andrews with the clean shaven handing out flyers thing is great. Dirty Daddy in the match I thought looked good. Adler doesn't look like he's lost a step since he's been out. And his kind of the fast paced action, the way that they worked really helps to solidify Dirty Daddy as a more serious character here. I think working with Adler really helped to show that. And just really showed Adler's kind of skill there. The time limit felt like it wasn't being used as a crutch by Adler here, but just it's the breaks of the title, which is really nice after you've had Andrews using it so much as a ploy to keep the title by running out the clock here. It felt more like it was just a really action-packed match that just went to the time limit. It's just kind of the quirks of the title. And I love Andrews refusing to let Adler add the 10 more minutes onto the title just because it's just not fair. Fair's fair. You got to do the 10 minutes or whatever. I thought that was great coming out of it. Just a lot more heat going on to Andrews and just solid stuff. It's interesting. Adler's got the title and you think this is about getting him over, but it's almost worrying that Eric Andrews' kind of gimmick is overshadowing it just because he's so good at this character. That he's actually kind of like taking up all of the attention from Adler's title reign here.
Yeah. Then we get CL Party with her team, and this is where she announced Faye Jackson's part of her team, and we get a Faye Jackson promo. Hey, this is cute. And I hate to sound sexist, but I always hate to have like two females on the team versus five dudes. I know intergender is part of intergender. I like the story here. Don't get me wrong, and I love CL, and I really enjoy Faye Jackson too in her role. But you know, the All Star are a top, you know, they're a top heel team, heel faction. So sometimes it's hard for me to swallow the two females on a team together. But I mean, at least you have the squad with you, so that helps. When you have the two, you know, the two biggest guys in the company also on the team, and Snooty Fox also another big hoss type guy, but I will say it helped with Stutzy's commentary during the match about how maybe CL was picking with her heart type stuff that we'll talk about later on. But what were your thoughts here about having the two females on a team?
I think at this point I wasn't 100% sure that the team captains were necessarily part of the teams to wrestle because CL's not really looked at as a wrestler to me. Right. So I just thought, oh, they have the one girl on there with Faye Jackson. I'm with you. I think it's fun, but I thought it was funny that Faye Jackson is saying, you know, that her milkshake is going to give them diarrhea. It was just kind of, that was such a weird thing to have happen in in this promo of trying to build up to this match. But, yeah, we'll get into kind of the dynamics, I guess, of the teams when we're talking about the match itself. But this promo here was fine overall.
Yeah, and that leads us to the main event, which is an interesting one. Trevor Lee versus Ethan Sharp based off the booking of Trevor Lee ending up beating Ethan Sharp's record in the Rumble. And this is quite interesting. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I thought that it was, you know, with the way that the stuff kind of happened with Trevor and Kane in the into the Rumble, and with Kane kind of coming out with getting some cheers and the crowd being into him, I thought they turned around and they're almost kind of going with that slight heel twinge of Trevor. It wasn't as bad here because obviously Sharp is a full-blown heel, you know, to that point. But Trevor almost felt like he was bullying at times in the beginning. He's being very kind of stiff with his arm, his mat work, and really going at him. And like I said, I just felt like if he had been going against almost anyone else, it could have been seen as the start of a heel turn for Trevor there, just the way that he was working so stiff and so aggressive with the arm work. That was interesting. You got Sharp kind of gloating too early on when he gets even just a little bit of offense, and it costs him pretty quickly, but eventually he is able to get some offense put together. Trevor starts to sell from underneath a bit, but then when he comes back real hot and pretty much puts him down. Time limit is, you know, the 20-minute time limit to say that he could stand with him. It sounds like the commentary is putting it over that if he had lasted the 20 minutes that Sharp would get to keep the title, which is interesting. Interesting dynamic for the match. And then having Trevor lock in that STF and Sharp is pretty much instantly tap out when there's only about 10 seconds left on the clock was really kind of interesting to me. I mean, you'd think he could hold out a little bit, but I guess that STF is just that bad that he couldn't hold on even for a second. Like I said, it was definitely an interesting format. It's definitely weird to see where they're going to be going with Trevor, because this almost had a twinge of heelness to me. I mean, he really felt like he was kind of a bully, and after having the crowd kind of cheering somewhat for Kane, I would think that you wouldn't turn around and have him work a match like this. So I'm wondering where they're going with Trevor coming out of this.
Yeah, I enjoyed this. I liked how they worked in the stiff, the time limit stiff to it, because it kind of put a TV title, how it used to be like the old TV title, champion would challenge for a belt, and his TV title would be up for the first 20 minutes, and then afterwards the belt would be on, so there's a different psychology to it, so I like that. I like Trevor toying with Sharp early on. Sharp is just really good as this amazing sniveling coward, especially when Trevor's putting in all these submission holds, and Sharp is just being a coward and sniveling about it. Finally, Sharp gets a big moment, and Sharp ends post Lee after selling for like 10 minutes of torture, and he pretty much took more than 10 minutes of an ass kicking. We think Sharp's going to get a little bit more heat, but no, Trevor makes the comeback, but gets low blowed, and then Sharp gets more and more work on top. Lee turns the table and then takes him down and gets the win. I thought it was like a good legit 3-star match, 3.25-star match, where it was worked in a way where Trevor Lee is the ace of this company. Sharp isn't on his level, but he toyed with him, gave Sharp a couple hope spots, but by the end with the finish, showed the finality that Sharp wasn't quite in Trevor Lee's range or on his level, but is slowly getting better and better, because a year ago, you know, you wouldn't have lasted this long. So I kind of like the whole dynamic and the psychology of the whole entire thing. And then that leads to CW Anderson cutting an Ultimate Survivor promo for Trevor Lee, and Trevor Lee accepts. So they'll be on opposite teams. That sounds like a pretty hot match. What about you?
Yeah, I was wondering what that was. I thought he was trying to challenge him to a title match. I was thinking unification, which obviously that gets talked about later on during the match on Ultimate Survivor. But yeah, that's the thing about CWF is that, you know, a lot of times they do really good with the booking, but there's a few times where stuff just feels kind of left up in the air. But I think in a good way, honestly, to where it makes you excited to watch, so you'll be able to actually figure everything out, which is really nice.
Yep, exactly. Hey, on that note, why don't we take a break, And when we come back, we'll talk CWF Ultimate Survivor.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacetoBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacetoBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacetoBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back, and we're back with CWF Ultimate Survivor, and we open up with a Cibernetico match, which is always fun. This side has Joshua Cutshaw, Ethan Sharp, Kane Justice, Frankie Flynn, Carson, PME, and Stokely Hathaway versus the Dirty Daddy, Adler, Lockhart, Coleman, McAllister, Richards. Who else am I missing here?
Okay, let me see. McAllister, you got Richards, Connor. Miss Connor. There's a Marino Tanagilia, who I don't even know who that was. Philly Collins, and I think that's everybody. Oh, did you say Frankie Flynn?
Yeah, I said Frankie Flynn.
Okay, yeah, then that's everybody.
Okay. I kind of like this. I enjoyed the opening. I loved how they teased us a Justice Adler moment right off the bat. So, because I really think that's going to be a big feud or a big big time coming up in. So I think this is the next belt. I think they're going to throw a lot of belt at Kane on his upward rise. And I think the TV title might be next on the agenda. I feel this is just a little tease, and the crowd definitely reacted to it like it was a big moment. I loved how much heat Kane was carrying in here, where the crowd is definitely feeling like he's a top heel, level heel for the company. I love the Nick Richards McAllister dynamic of them trying to outstrike each other and against the opponents. I'm really digging McAllister, but it feels like they just beat him all the time, though. I feel bad. No, I don't want to say feel bad, but it almost like limits his mobility in a way, or his upward mobility, because it feels like he's getting over. But I'm a firm believer in wins and losses. Really, that's where where you get positioned in life and in a wrestling company. And if you're the one losing, that doesn't make you a top line of babyface. But I'm totally digging the dude. I thought Carson got over pretty well as a cheater in here. Loved the Coleman Cutshaw spot. Which is funny. It was like I tweeted this out. Like when I first saw Caprice Coleman, who was just this freak athletic guy in Wildside, and now the guy's grown up as a wrestler, where he's able to do shtick. He's a really good promo. He can do different types of characters. And now he makes his big moves mean stuff, where it's just, now he's just got this really good worker. I love the Kane and Richards tease. I can't wait to see these guys hook it up at Battlecade. I thought they did a great job of the few moments we had with them. I thought the work was so stiff, and you got across that these guys really hate each other. So I thought they did a fantastic job handling that situation by not giving us too much of them, just teasing it enough where you're freaking foaming at the mouth to see these guys go. So good job there. I just love that early viciousness between the two of them. I loved Cecil's comment of Kane's the next man. The next man for Kane is Kane's the next man to the locker room. I like that, showing back to back, you know, showing back a little bit of history that they don't like each other. I also liked how Nick eliminates Kane, but I love Kane's revenge on Richards to set up his elimination. So they both cause each other's elimination in a way, and now I just like that, adding a little wrinkle more to their feud. I thought this was a great way to get, and then Sharp's down to Sharp versus two baby faces, Dirty Daddy and Adler, and Sharp pulls off the miracle, which I didn't see coming, and goes over. And I think this sets up a possible three-way between the three of them at Battlecade. Off the draw from the previous week, Sharp beating both of them, I can see them both putting their belts on the line against Ethan Sharp. Do you think that's a possibility coming out of this?
Yeah, I think that would be that's a possibility, and I would definitely could get into it. I think that they did a really good job back-to-back making Sharp look like a big deal. So, yeah, I think they could go to almost anything with him vis-a-vis like title shots and stuff like that after these two big weeks, and then whatever happens at Battlecade is going to be kind of the next story in that, I guess.
Yeah, and I enjoyed this. I gave it 2 3/4. I thought they did a good job with combining some action with some further developments of the angles going forward, and you know, ultimately that's the end goal, is Battlecade right now in December, and I felt they set up some stuff, and I'm curious that I really feel this three way is something they're gonna pay off for us. What were your thoughts on the match?
Pretty similar with you. I think a big takeaway for me that kind of sucks is that while I've started to get more into Darius Carter, he really felt like he was an afterthought here. Didn't really stand out at any point in the match, which he's a guy that should be somewhat important here as he's on the rise. He should be taking opportunities like this and making the most out of them, and I think that he kind of missed that. He missed that here. That said, I think you're right about pretty much everything else you said. Cutshaw, for me, was clearly the MVP of the match. I was thinking that early on, and then I actually hear them talk about that on commentary, so clearly that was possibly a plan or just kind of worked out that way, but he definitely stood out, felt like a big deal throughout the match, getting involved with a lot of different people, a lot of interesting matchups, the McAllister matchups, interaction. I mean, he puts McAllister down pretty quickly, but that's a matchup that I would have liked to have seen kind of go a little bit further. But yeah, all in all, good stuff. I enjoyed Stokely's involvement, and then the finish on him was, I think, perfect as he goes out. Adler Cutshaw was fun. Again, more stuff that I could watch, more of that. And then, yeah, you go into the finish with Sharp being able to fight off the two baby faces on his own. It was really interesting to see where they're going to be going with him next, because that's a... that's a big deal, especially for a guy that's been treated kind of like a jokey heel, to put away two of your stronger, young, rising generation baby faces all on his own that way.
I still feel he needs that punch, needs a roll of quarters or a loaded glove or something to give it more bite, since he's a heel. It almost comes, I mean, I know a punch is illegal in wrestling, but it just... And nowadays, I don't know if it transpires as well. It just comes across like the heel wins clean, which I just hate. what do you think of Andrews coming out and stuff?
Again, a little bit, not, I won't say overbearing, but a little bit like Andrews is kind of the focus of the whole thing. It was interesting, though, the way he fired back up on Stokely after Stokely was talking some shit to him. Seemed like Stokely might have got confused because he says, why is the TV champion here such a wuss? Why are you such a wuss or whatever? And it's like, well, the TV champion, oh, I guess he did just get beat. But still, I was like, I wonder if he thinks that Eric Andrews is the TV champion here, possibly. I don't know. Wasn't quite sure what was going on there. But coming out of it, I was interested to see, because, I mean, this felt almost like a face angle for Andrews, attacking Stokely that way, getting fired up and angry at him for talking about him that way. So we'll see where they go from there, where they're going from here. But Andrews looked great, I thought, and I think he looks really good in this role, so I'm just interested what their plan is to do next.
Yeah, one of my favorite things of this was how Andrews' face went from happy-go-lucky, baby-kissing politician character to when he goes and hits the lariat on Stokely. His face will just completely change as a whole entire... He drops the facade and he's Eric Andrews. I like that. I absolutely love the fan stomping the shit out of his bumper sticker. I thought that was tremendous. Now it makes me wonder if we're going to get Andrews and Stokely at Battlecade in some form of gimmick match.
Yeah, I would expect it to be Stokely's a representative, honestly.
Okay.
Someone Stokely's going to bring out. And if they're kind of aligning Stokely with AIW already and he's got the Dream Team thing, I could see it being Dominic, or it could be the PB Smooth, or someone along those lines would be, I think, probably pretty good for it, for Stokely. I mean, Stokely's obviously also aligned with Chikara, so he could bring out Chikara guys, but it seems right now they're putting
or,
him more...
Or maybe Gresham.
Or, I mean, I would love it for it to be Gresham.
You know, he's doing for TV Champion, but they do it... Everyone thinks he's for TV Champion for Mid-Atlantic. Maybe bring Gresham in.
Oh, and yeah.
For the Powerbomb TV title.
Yeah, exactly. That would be pretty good, and I can definitely get behind that. I mean, you heard me a couple weeks ago glowing about the Stokely Gresham act, so I think them coming into CWF would just be even more awesomeness.
Yeah, I honestly think Stokely has, I mean, if they did it, I mean, you can't do it on the minor leagues. I mean, he'll be a popular act, but he'll never be a super drawing act in on the indies. But, you know, Stokely has all the tools to be a top tier manager in the WWE, and actually carry a promotion with a stable, because he's that damn good of bumping. He can bump. He's kind of, you don't, I mean, when he wants to be, you really don't like him. He knows how to work a crowd. He's honestly, I think, the best working manager in wrestling right now.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any question there. I mean, the guy is just, like, great promo, great worker, can do the comedy stuff, but can also be serious, can sell really well, you know, just all in all. I agree with you very much. He's, like, at least you would assume somewhat on WWE's radar with the Evolve connection, so you'd think that they would know. I don't know what they would be waiting for at this point for him, but it's also...
Well, they just don't do managers. I mean, that's the problem.
That's it. Yeah, what it comes down to, what are they going to do? Because they just don't have managers. How would they even bring him in? It is interesting, because the guy could be... He could be money. He could be someone that they could actually get behind if they just used him right.
Yeah, and I want to say I do like him in Evolve, but it just feels like he's so much better suited being in a promotion like a... CWF Mid-Atlantic, or even if he worked PWX regularly, it just seems like he'd be better suited for week-to-week kind of that, in a way, as opposed to being on Evolve where he pop up every few months type of stuff. It's just, there's only so much the Evolve booking. I've never really thought, I mean, they're more about putting together super matches than developing people's personalities and stuff and putting heat on somebody or whatever. Where Stoke, I mean, the way he talks and the way he acts, I mean, that guy, you know, could be a super heat magnet everywhere he goes. And it's just a shame that the wrestling business has changed in that sense, where a guy as talented as Stokely Hathaway isn't making serious money in the wrestling business at this point in time. It's mind-blowing to me because the guy has all the tools necessary to be the guy who you could build a whole entire freaking promotion around, trying to topple down and him bringing in different people. He could have been like how Jimmy Hart was to the Memphis territory, where he'd just bring in different person after different person to have Jerry Lawler beat, and or Bobby Heenan having a family like in the WWE, or even Jim Cornette having a group. Or Gary Hart in Texas. It's an art that isn't used in wrestling anymore, and it's a shame. It's a dead trope, and I'm sorry. I think a good manager can go a long, long way, and especially if you have weekly television or episodic television like Mid-Atlantic does. I know he can't work there every time because he's an indie guy, and he's not bound by contracts. But man, I think he could be a game changer for any promotion that had weekly television or episodic like television. I'm that high on the guy. And then we got Mike Mars versus Metallica and Number Boy and Cool J. He pretty much just freaking destroys the geek squad here. Nothing too exciting out of it. Just a total destruction, right?
Yeah, nothing to say there except for just a
building of Mars as a monster is pretty much what we got.
Yep.
And then we get Donnie Dollars, and he faces the returning Ray Kandrak. I'm excited. Then now we've got him back-to-back, not back-to-back, but we've had Kandrak back in the swing of things. It feels like he might be making a return full-time or at least be working, at least, you know, or at least getting a lot more, or getting back into the swing of things where he's working, you know, maybe every other month or so. What do you think?
Yeah, he might be the semi-retired. He'll probably turn into, like, at the same level of Mitch Connor's Donnie Dollars, where they're not on every show. They might be working every show, but they're not actually always ending up on the TV. And they're not this focused, but CWF, it's funny because I'm actually in the middle of having a conversation about ROH and how they do a good job of referencing their history and their legends and their lore as a company. I mean, CWF is obviously the best at that. They make their legends feel special, and they make the bigger legends who may have not even wrestled in CWF but just are from the Mid-Atlantic area feel like big deals as well. So these two just had a real smash mouth, co at each other. It was like a minute and a half. But it came across like these are two big behemoth legends who you should take seriously and could beat up anybody because they just got this built-up aura and power. And I think Ray Kandrak would probably be perfectly suited to kind of move into that territory and maybe not put a bunch more bumps on his body. And he doesn't necessarily need to have another big title run, but he can definitely fill out a card and give the crowd something that they want to see.
Yeah, I enjoyed this match. That was like a nice little fun hot sprint between Kandrak and Donnie Dollars. It was just kind of like, hey, here we go. And I thought it was a nice breather between these, elimination matches and stuff. And then we get Brad Attitude on the shtick. Great stuff from Brad. The guy might be, he's one of the top five promos in wrestling right now. People ask why he might not have made it. I go, it's clear. I don't think they don't like to have too many Southern people in the WWF, so I think that might have something to do with it. I mean, that's one of the main reasons of stuff. I don't know for sure, but man, the guy can work. The guy has a good enough look. The guy can talk. This is great. We get another a nice little Dolph sighting, and here he kind of sets up like he's not there, and that pays off later on, which I honestly, at first, kind of bought into it. I bought into it. I thought he was playing. I honestly thought he wasn't going to be there and was playing up the big shot that they're at the Guns N' Roses show. Did you foresee this? Did you buy into it, or did you expect him to pop back later on?
Oh, I 100% bought into it because he's done this before. And he, you know what I mean? There's no reason to believe that he wouldn't he's just actually not there because he does it all the time. So yeah, it totally worked. I bought it hook, line, and sinker.
Totally.
Yeah.
Because I popped when he showed up, folks. My guess what? He shows up. Chet, spoiler. Chet Sterling comes out, and he won. And what Brad Attu's in his promo essentially, he wants Trevor Lee, and which is, I think, a nice little tease there. But freaking Chet's out, and he wants Attitude for what happened at the Rumble. I thought Chet, what he did was good here. What about you?
Yeah, no, it was great, and I love that he comes out all fired up, and I don't care what he says, and I'm getting that match, and yeah, I just thought that was great.
And then we get the All-Stars versus Team Party. What did you make of this, man?
I liked the second that they come out, Eric Royal is already just taking over the entire screen. The whole scene is all about Eric Royal. I mean, instantly, the guy is just, he's big as a room. He fills the whole room with his kind of personality. So that was cool. Starting out the match with Snooty and Wilkins, I thought was good. I thought maybe possibly building that up as a Battlecade match, but obviously that's not where they're going. I thought Swans going after Faye was just insane heat. Got everybody just super excited, and the crowd just going nuts, and everyone involved going crazy for it just because this big German evil monster is attacking this woman there. There's some old man with a whistle that gets involved in the middle of the match because Eric Royal can't just let it go. He's like, who has that whistle? He's looking for him, and he's going all around and finds him, and the guy comes and gets in their face and blows the whistle. Just like fun kind of home style wrestling stuff. Really love
that
what
was, that was Andrew Everett's grandfather.
Oh, did they say that? I heard them say it was someone's grandfather, but I didn't hear that it was Andrew Everett's. Which
yeah,
is great.
So everyone knew who he was. Yeah.
Okay, so he's even kind of in kayfabe. He should definitely have a problem with them too. So
yes.
So that's why he's even being a total jerk. This breaks down into essentially a rematch of the finals of the Canoodle Cup. With the Sandwich Squad versus the All-Stars, which I just thought, I loved that match then. Super into it here again. Like the double team elimination where they get rid of both Wilkins and Royal at the same time. Coach is just livid. He doesn't want anything to do with the final. They try to just leave. Everyone comes back out and pushes them in there. And CL just locks in a big head scissors for the win instantly. I guess it's a figure four headlock, right, according to Taz. Puts it away. Great action, great fun. You got your payoff, you got your catharsis. There was definitely different times where you could have expected almost anything to happen, but it still also delivered with some awesome matchups and some face-to-face stuff. Sandwich Squad looked great here, kind of rehabbing from the loss last week, and just a whole lot of fun, man.
Yeah, I totally enjoyed what we got here. I mean, I just let out belly laughing when Otto and Faye were rolling on the mat with Stutzy yelling, catfight. Now I'm still belly laughing. I was dying. I felt like Otto Swans and Roy Wilkins were really the standouts inside the ring. Of course, Royal stood out with his personality. I love how CL... at the end, Jerry Carey decides he's just going to leave, and all CL Party has backup and won't let him leave, so he's got to get beat. So I enjoyed that part because they're like, hey, we have nothing to lose. Let's just get the hell out of here, which is something they brought up in the build that the All-Stars have nothing to lose. So I kind of like how he'd rather just be a coward than try to fight valiantly against a female. I like that. I loved CL making him tap out. I loved the dynamic of the squad and then making the big comeback for CL, where it looked like they were down. And they were down 3-2 in a way, and or it was 4-2 or whatever it was. And it was all because the squad came up and made the big comeback, which builds them up strong going into Battlecade. So I'm looking forward to that. They didn't really push where they're going on the developments of where they're going with that feud. But, man, I thought they did a good job of really making the squad strong going into Battlecade with the big win here. And CL Party getting her victory over Jerry Carey. So that was freaking fantastic. Then we get this match, and I didn't quite understand the rules in the main event. Finally, I got it, but it's 3-on-3, and it starts off with Lee and C.W. Anderson wrestling, and they're going at it, but then all of a sudden, Brad Attitude, and we don't know who the partners are, but then Brad Attitude attacks, and then we find out he's part of C.W. Anderson's crew, and that sets up a disqualification loss, I think, which takes Attitude out, but then they get a pin, and that brings them back because it's 2 out of 3 falls, ends up being, I guess. But once you lose a fall, you get eliminated, and the odds are against you. I think they needed to explain it a little better, the rules, because I didn't quite understand it. Did you understand the rules?
I did, but I think that they did a much better job of explaining the rules of this last year, because this is a normal thing that they do. And I felt like this year it was tough to follow. They didn't do a great job at kind of explaining it.
And I think part of it was because you had the run-ins, and I think in the past we knew what the teams were, right?
Right. So this one, we don't know who the teams are. The way the match works is the first round is a singles match, the second round is a tag match, and the third round is a trios match, and it's 2 out of 3 falls. And you can the captain is allowed to decide who fights for in what falls. And they talked about how historically Trevor likes to keep himself in every fall, rather than let like someone else work the tag match or let him work the singles or something like that. But in here, they told the story that he got stuck doing the whole thing as he got jumped and cheated, and also got jumped by Brad Attitude to begin with. So he didn't even have the option to switch out if he had wanted to, which I thought was kind of a nice play on that because they openly said, you know, that's his game plan, but maybe in this situation he would change his game plan because he is getting so beat up and he's getting kind of double-teamed and all this, but he didn't even have the option to, which I thought was good. I thought the story of the match overall was done really well, but yeah, I think that the explanation of the rules was done a lot better last year. And I think, yeah, you're right. The part of it is understanding how many members were on the team and getting the full-on explanation. That said, I thought the action was good. The jumping by Brad Attitude in the beginning, we both talked about it. We both totally bought into that. Had no idea that it was coming. Because, I mean, they're in the middle of doing all the title announcements for C.W. Anderson, going forever and ever. Loved Stutz even questioning the name of one of the companies. And C.W. Anderson has a great response. He's like, I didn't make the promotion. I was just the champion, which I thought was great. Yeah, the whole thing was just was done really well. The tag section was nice. I like Stutz putting over that he picked out people who have the biggest issues with the people on Trevor's team, but they didn't. He didn't also point out that he intentionally picked a member of the Dawsons, you know, for the tag situation because they're such great tag workers. You know, I would like to have had him kind of mention that too, that it was a doubly smart pick because he also picked out someone with so much experience as a tag worker. I mean, they did kind of talk about his history as a tag worker, but put some of that on. That's why he was such a great choice for this match setup.
That would have been a nice one. Yeah.
Yeah. So all in all, it was definitely really great action. I think that they did a perfect job of really building up a lot of heat from the beginning of the match all the way until Chet gets his big kind of hot tag where he's finally able to come back as he kind of got jumped beforehand. And so then Chet essentially just has this gigantic hot tag to finish up the match. And Trevor gets jumped and knocked out with the Nux by Wilkins. And that's when I was like, oh, I think I was right. I think I was right that they protected the Wilkins-Trevor matchup in the Rumble because that's where they're going to at Battlecade. That was instantly what I thought there. And then it was confirmed with the post-match promo from Trevor, which I think was done pretty well. Trevor's leaking the blood after being attacked. His team has lost. And he's talking about his dad being sick and going to the hospital. And he wants to do a first blood match with Roy Wilkins at Battlecade. So seems like that's kind of where they're going with that. And you got Chet and Brad Attitude. And it's definitely some big stuff. It's interesting to understand what the plan is for Converse. I mean, obviously they talked about C.W. Anderson's team being the people who have the most issue with Trevor's team. So I don't know where that relates. I mean, obviously you got Brad Attitude and Chet Sterling.
Well, Converse and Anderson fought last year.
Yeah, but then I was like wondering where the Dawson brother falls into that idea, but I guess we'll just see where it goes from there. Good stuff. Really great action. Great storytelling. Put together. Fantastic promo on the end. Lots of drama to set up a match for the essentially going to be the main event for the Battlecade, which you know that Wilkins and the All-Stars and all that are going to say there's no way he's going to give him the first blood match that he wants without the title being on the line. I think we all know that, so
right.
I expect that to be the big title match.
Yeah, I mean, we both knew Wilkins and him felt like that was going to be the main event. I like them going this route with the Nux, which they've actually been setting up for a while now. So I like the payoff of them bloodying him up, and it was a great visual seeing him laid in a bloody pool. With that said, I thought they did a fantastic job getting to where that point to now we're going to go. That is definitely going to be the main event of Battlecade. So we can pretty much feel like that for sure on paper going to be there. Kane and Nick Richards feels like a for sure match. I still think we're going to get the Squad versus the Dawsons in a last man standing match or a Texas Death match in one of those, in that type of stip. For sure. I think now we're going to have Andrews versus like a Stokely representative. I think Sharp is going to be in the three-way dance with Daddy and Adler. So that just leaves a couple other spots, I think. Maybe some, just to throw a six-man tag or something on there to get some of these guys on there. But you want to see maybe like a Michael McAllister somewhere on there. He's the one that really stands out to me. We're going to get Chet and Brad Attitude, of course, like you said. And I feel like, we'll probably get another type of match with C.W. Anderson and Rick Converse. See what's coming up. Last year they did a pretty good job building it in the last month, so maybe they'll be able to do it again here. I'm just not sure. But I think that might be the direction they're going. Or maybe, I don't want to see CW tied into the tag situation. I think they should be separate. But it's rounding out to be a pretty interesting card. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I know they like to do a big kind of comedy tag match. They've got so many guys that, like you're talking about, McAllister. I think McAllister, Cutshaw, Mars. There's a lot of guys who are definitely kind of more serious brawlers who need something to do. So maybe if they threw together more of a kind of a fight, like a big time fight tag team, multi-man tag team match instead of just a comedy thing.
You're just a battle royal, wouldn't hurt.
Yeah. Or even something like that.
Nothing to help get Mars over, you know?
Right. Something with a little bit more of a tinge on hard hitting kind of battle royal match, I think would be good. Something like that. I think could definitely work. Something stupid like a knockout kind of thing, you know, if you get knocked off your feet, you're out kind of deal with just a half dozen or a dozen of the baddest asses in the company, you know? I think you could do almost anything like that where you just kind of mix those guys in because they don't necessarily have anything too important for them right now, no title matches, but I think they all need something serious on the show to keep them important. But again, they also got some comedy guys and they got some AIW guys that they'll probably bring in, some Chikara guys, so I think they did a really good job last year building up into the show. I think they're similarly having a good time building in, but we'll have to see where it goes from here because I think the difference, too, is that last year the main event was really built around Brad Attitude's promo skills, and this year you got Wilkins, who's not necessarily as good of a promo.
No, he's not.
As Brad Attitude. I think that's not, that's obviously not saying a lot because Brad Attitude is on a lot of people's lists as a top promo in 2017. So I think that does in some ways hurt the hype a little bit. So we'll have to see if they give Trevor and Wilkins and the All-Stars and all that some more mic time, maybe cut a hot angle. I think Trevor can definitely carry a solid, the program or the promo side of the game for the program. But I think we got to get something from Wilkins as well to get us, to get me interested in the show overall more.
Maybe Coach can carry it on the promos. One thing I liked about the match, especially, was they still left open the Trevor Lee Brad Attitude. Like there was no finality between those guys in the match. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, exactly. Exactly. There's still action to be had between those two. There's still interesting stuff to go down the line. So that's another match that we can get to here down the line pretty soon, probably.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of interesting stuff, man. They just know what they're doing down there. Another easy, great, really good thumbs-up show. And, I mean, for a show that was pretty much there for trying to set up a lot of stuff, I thought they did a really good job, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's kind of, you know, it's in between. It's kind of treated like a super card, but it's also a just another episode of TV. It really kind of toes that line well as being feeling important but not overshadowing the big shows.
Yeah, but it was important enough, yeah. I mean, they had enough stuff. I mean, I thought they did a good job of building it around, and a smart decision building it around CL and Jerry Carey were... You definitely have an opinion on both those people. Like, you know, you really genuinely like CL Party and you want to see her succeed. So I thought that was smart, kind of positioning that in the build as the main event in a way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that did help a lot with the overall enjoyment for the build of the show.
Cool. Well, on that note, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we're talking NXT War Games.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacetoBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacetoBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacetoBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. And, man, we're back with NXT War Games. And it opens up with Chris Hero versus Lars Sullivan. Cassius Ohno versus Lars Sullivan. I thought that this is exactly what the match needed to be. Sullivan starting out as the monster here. This is laid out to really make Sullivan really dig in this heat section that Sullivan has on Hero. I thought it was a decent way to set up Hero's comeback. Love the psychology of the big build for Sullivan finally being taken down. A lot of people, because a lot of big guys, they prostitute themselves by being big. I mean, even I'm like a huge Keith Lee fan, but you see the guy doing moonsaults and he's taking big bumps. And sometimes he ends up prostituting his size to get the quick pop as opposed to making it matter. And here they really built to Sullivan finally being knocked down. And that's how they used to do it, man. It's just a psychology. It's almost like a forgotten psychology because you're more interested in the oohs and ahs. And here they went back to the old school psychology and the big build for Sullivan finally being taken down. I thought it was a great story piece. Hero's offense is so credible. It made Sullivan even bigger ass kicker. Sullivan goes over what they needed to do. I give this 3 stars. I know it's funny. People still get upset seeing Hero Job. I go, dude, that's his job, man. He's a trainer. He's there to make people. And this is one of his projects, is making Lars Sullivan. And I thought they had a big hoss fight, and they worked it exactly what it needed to do to get Sullivan over even more as a monster and to draw money for the company. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, very similar feeling, it seems, as to what you had here. I thought that that Lars really felt like the irresistible force. Without Hero being kind of that immovable object, Hero was kind of selling. He's fighting off the back foot when he has a chance, but Lars Sullivan was continuing pressure no matter what the whole way through. He's constantly all over him until he misses the big splash, which I thought was, yeah, like you said, a great way to protect him. He kind of did himself in. He created his own. He created the opening for Ono himself. He didn't get taken out by Ono. That's kind of, you talk about the psychology stuff being missing. I mean, that used to be such a big part of wrestling, the psychology of, well, how do we set up the transitions? How do we, you know, build the comebacks? Was something important. It wasn't like a lot of guys now, it feels like they just don't think about that part. They just go like, oh, I just come back. And you're like, well, yeah. Why though? Like, every guy doesn't need to be 50-50. So, like, there needs to be some guys who you can't come back unless something happens. You don't just always, oh, I'm just always able to come back on you because we're both just equals. And, you know, that feels like the way that they look at wrestling now. And it's, no, here it was Sullivan had to do it himself by fucking up. He set himself up to get Hero's comeback on him. But even that is like momentary. As Sullivan is just, like I said, unstoppable here. Feels like a movie villain monster kind of overall, just like this just unbeatable force that to be reckoned with for Hero. And Hero turns around and essentially just gets taken down almost instantly after having a little bit of a fighter's chance, it seems. I gave this 2¾ stars. Freak Accident is just a great name for a finish, a great finish. It's just a big, like, kind of body wrench slam to the mat. It's just nasty looking. And Sullivan comes out of this looking like $1 million. I mean, if there's one thing WWE knows how to do right, it's big monsters, man. They really can push a big monster.
No, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, this is the worst match on the show. And I will agree with that. But it wasn't, I don't think it was meant to be a great work rate match. It was the whole, I thought, of all the matches on the show, I think it, besides the Aleister Black Velveteen Dream, I honestly felt this match probably served its purpose better than any other match on the show.
Yeah, that's such a weird argument to make because, like, sure, it's the worst match on the show. It's also the opening match. It's also a match that was really built around kind of putting over and showcasing a limited worker while having him work with it. I mean, you know, Chris Hero's not old by any imagine, but he's also a vet that's kind of outside of his prime when it comes to WWE. Physically, I mean, psychology wise, he's at the top of his game, obviously. But yeah, that's such a weird argument to make, especially for a match that wasn't bad. Like, sure, yeah, it's the worst match, but that doesn't mean it was a bad match. It was just the worst match of these five or whatever. And God, I can almost argue, or you could almost argue, I don't think I would necessarily myself, but that the War Games, because of the bloat and kind of it going too long and a little bit of the ridiculousness of it, you could almost say it did a worse job of serving its purpose and may have been a worse match, just depending on what you're looking for, you know? So it's such a weird argument to make, honestly.
Yeah, and you know, and you think maybe it's also the way, because the bottom line is, I mean, NXT probably attracts, do you think this is a fair number, 90% of the audience are WWE fans?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I don't think, okay. I think there's very few people who are like me that the only thing that they watch of WWE is NXT.
Okay, so we're in agreement here. Do you think also maybe because WWE fans are trained that the opening match is supposed to be like one of the best matches on the show? Because they try to, I mean, I mean, frack, we've had a couple meetings. We had manias open up with ladder matches, for crying out loud. I mean, in the past, you never opened up with a ladder match. I think NXT does a tremendous job building to the main events and making their main events matter because they at least build them to these are special moments. And here, this is the whole point of this match is just to make a guy. Isn't it have a, you're not, we're not putting you on to steal the show. You have 6 minutes to make Lars Sullivan into a monster. And that's what they did. And I think a lot of the, I think to some fans that they're not expecting, because they, NXT to me builds a show to how you would build a show in the 80s where you start here and you build and climax in your main event. And here and a lot of times in the WWF, they're like, here you go, steal the show. And they'll open up with a super hot match and not really build as well. Do you think that has something to do with them having a negative vibe on the Sullivan Hero match?
That's probably 100% the case, honestly. Is that I think people have an expectation that the opening match should be a main event level match. And that this was not. I think that you're right that NXT
or a work rate level match or something, yeah.
Right, something that feels like a big deal that has crazy moments and all this. And I think that you're right that NXT, I think, has every big show. It's either been the main event or, if they slightly misfired, the semi-main event have always felt like the biggest matches on the show, I think, bar none. I think every now and then they slightly miss the boat and they have a semi-main event that clearly should have been the main event. But I think that that's rare. And most of the time they slowly build the cards until you get to the biggest matches at the end. And the final match feels like the biggest deal, and that's the way that it should be. So, yeah, I think that that's a lot of it. But the weird thing about it, too, is that for the people live in the building, this wasn't the first match that they saw.
True.
You know? So it is kind of weird to think about that as well. But the people watching at home, yeah, this was the first match that they saw. So maybe they were disappointed because they expected something else. So I wonder if, because they probably got a really fiery Pete Dunne versus Johnny Gargano match or something as the first match of the show, they're live in the building, that they weren't let down the same way and didn't see it the same way.
That's true, too. Good point. Well, another thing I've come to the conclusion with the NXT shows is that 2.5 hour show feels like the perfect time. Like, originally they started off with 2 hour shows, and that felt a little short, where, like, the undercard never really had a chance to develop. Like, you'd have two or three matches, each only getting 5 minutes or 6 minutes or 7 minutes. And then you get the two main events, like the semi-main and the main event, getting time. Now everyone's getting, now the 2.5 hours, it feels like it fleshes up enough time for everybody to have a pretty good match. And as a fan, it doesn't burn you out and leaves you wanting more. So you're hot the whole entire show. Because I thought this War Games crowd was hot, and that was with another hour of TV they were shooting, too.
Yeah, I think that you're 100% correct on pretty much all of those opinions of the situation. I think that they essentially, like, well, I think part of it, too, is that before, with the hour and a half long kind of show, it was also a time when the undercard, while still good, wasn't quite at the level that they are now.
No, yeah.
I think that a lot of the undercard guys here definitely need that more time. Well, I think that, I mean, I fucking love Tyler Breeze, but I don't necessarily know that those early NXT cards needed, like, the Tyler Breeze match to have an extra 5 minutes on every show. You know, I think.
No, I totally agree with you. I agree with you on that part.
Yeah, so I think that they found their sweet spot based on how their roster is, which is another thing that we'll just see how that goes, because as the roster develops and changes, does a Triple H and, you know, whoever he's working with now as one of his head writers, do they start to tailor the shows more based on what they can deliver with their roster, or do they just stick with it's 2.5 hours and that's how it works? We'll see how that goes, you know.
Yep. And that leads us to the next match, which is Aleister Black versus the Velveteen Dream. And before you say anything, I think both of us owe, I mean, oh, well, I'll let you say it if you agree or not. But I owe Velveteen Dream and a big apology, because this match delivered big time for me. It got both guys over. Why don't you talk about the match and if you agree or disagree with me here?
I agree with you. When I first heard about this match being ran on the house shows and all that, I said, this is not a program I want to watch. I don't give a shit about this. I was told by people who saw it live on house shows that it's a great matchup. These guys have great chemistry. And I'm kind of like, we'll see. Yeah. As the program goes along, I think we both grew to think that Dream was looking better and better. I did question, I think, his final kind of go-home promo situation just because he seemed so blown up before when he was trying to cut his like one of his last promos, so I thought that that hurt. I think that the promo packages, they did a great job of cutting them together to really make it feel like a big deal what was going on here. And then the match kicks in, and I mean, from the entrances, I think Aleister Black's entrance just oozes star power. He feels like a big fucking deal when he's coming to the ring. Big Show, Little Show. It's like his entrance doesn't have to be changed, but it feels as important as the event that he's on every time. So when he's on the smaller shows, it just feels like he's doing, it's the same entrance, but it feels like it's a, you know, it's a small show entrance. He does it on a big show, it feels like a big show entrance. So it's just, it's interesting the way that works. Dream comes out, he's got some gear on, he's looking fresh, he pulls off the tearaway pants, and he's got airbrushed himself and Aleister Black on his tights. I love this. Really kind of goes back to that, like, focused, it's a theme-specific set of gear. So he's not going to be wearing that gear again, you know what I mean? He's wearing this one time, but it makes it even feel like even more of a big deal.
It was total. It was funny because it was total Rick Rude, and he ends up doing the Rick Rude swivel too.
Yes, definitely getting that Rick Rude kind of inspiration there, which worked back then. It works now. Then we get into the match, and Aleister Black is focusing on this hammer lock. He's grabbing this arm over and over again. I love that stuff. It really reminds me of that old school wrestling. Every time the guy gets the counter, you're going right back to the same hold. You're countering back into the same hold every time. Just shows that doggedness, that this is what he's looking for. Eventually he grabs a guillotine for a second, but quickly goes back to the arm. He hits that submission. I forget what he was calling it, but he was using it as a finishing submission on the indies for a while there. It's kind of a modified octopus hold. So just good stuff there. Black teases a dive, but backflips into the crisscross applesauce sitting in the middle of the ring. And, Velveteen Dream gets in there and gets up in his face. He mocks him. He's sitting cross-legged. He's, they're kind of doing talking about the mind games back and forth. They're showing the mind games. And it's funny because I heard, and you know, I'll give credit, Bruce Mitchell breaking down the match and saying how this was not a match that Velveteen Dream showed anything to Aleister Black that Aleister Black should respect, and he just was kind of messing with him with mind games, and why would that make any sense psychology-wise that Aleister Black would then give him what he wanted at the end and say his name, because he didn't prove anything to him except for still being a big old clown. And I was like, I really think that you looked over the nuances here. Dream wasn't just playing mind games. Dream was countering Black's mind games. And if you stop and think about it, so much of Black's character is subtle mind games that I think it's almost so subtle that you don't notice it, or people don't notice it. He is a mind game wrestler, just like Dream is. And I think that's why this matchup worked, is that Dream is this kind of stereotypical gay panic mind games gold dust wrestler, but Aleister Black is the Undertaker. And, you know, who's the king used to say, it's the master of the mind games. What he's actually doing, he may be coming across like he's dressed like the devil, but what he's actually just doing is just trying to fuck with his opponents to make them think he's the devil, to scare them. So what Dream showed here is that just like Aleister Black, Dream isn't just this guy who's only stupidly focused on this gay panic mind games. He's actually able to stay focused on the match while also working the psychology and the mind games. So I think that's where Black gets the respect. He realizes, oh, this guy isn't just this big, you know, weirdo freak who's got nothing to back it up. He's actually got the cerebral, like, concepts behind it. He's actually working these mind games against me to try to, like, use them to take an advantage on him. So I just thought that was really, like, that was what it really came down to. From there, Black comes into his big comeback after Dream had worked him over for a bit. And there's been, you know, talk over the years about that Tommy and some of his kicks and strikes can look a little sloppy. I thought his hot comeback here came across almost perfect. excuse me.
Bless you.
And then from there, he goes in, big DDT. Black kicks out of the DDT, so Dream goes up top looking for the Ah, Jesus. I got allergies here. So yeah, he hits the Dave Crist spinning weird DDT, goes up top for the Purple Rainmaker, but it gets countered. He's locked up in the ropes. I love Drake, you know, telling Aleister Black to get back, and that sets up a real quick little strike off between the two. But if you're going to go strike for strike with Aleister Black, you're going to be, you know, it's a fool's errand. So the strike off gets punctuated with the Black Mass. Dream's down. I gave this match 3¾ stars. You talk about filling exactly what it needed to do. It did on every way. I think it told a really deep, nuanced story. Had a lot of great action. There was focus. There was different, like, interesting work. And it was really kind of star-making performance for Velveteen Dream. I felt like, God, if he can do some more stuff like this, he could be a guy that I actually take seriously going up onto the main roster and having at least some kind of impact in WWE as a whole.
Yeah, I went 3.5 on it. I felt the crowd early on babyface Dream, and I got a little nervous. But Black did his job so well, he was able to get the crowd back onto him. Crowd was totally into this match. You're talking about the hammerlock, and when we're talking about he did the Rude swivel Dream, he also sold his arm like Rude when he posed and stuff, popped off a pose. He'd do it. So he's definitely a lot of Rick Rude influence to the guy. And having Black say his name, I thought the match helped Dream a huge time, big time in a loss, which I think is a hard. Again, I will say it. I think losing in a match and getting a guy over that well is like the hardest thing to do in wrestling, and they did it here in spades. I kind of think they might have turned Velveteen Dream babyface coming out of this match, which is fine. So I really don't think they. I don't know. I don't think they. I don't think they have a long-term plan on what they're going to do with the Dream. I thought they thought this was an interesting matchup. And I think they can go forward with him as a babyface or a heel. I don't think it really matters in their grand scheme of things. I don't think they had a long-term Velveteen Dream plan. With that said, though, yeah, he definitely was a good match. Both guys worked their tails off. And the payoff was great. I almost felt the payoff was so good. I felt like it might have been an audible because the crowd was so got into his act so well that they're like, oh man, we gotta reward it in babyface. I'm sure I'm wrong, okay? But it totally felt like it was like Velveteen. Not only that, it felt like he earned that moment to me in the match. And he got over huge.
That was exactly what I was gonna say. As you're saying that it felt like it was an audible. I think that they. They counted on, you know, they were going to do it, but it felt so authentic and so, like, he did earn that respect that it made perfect sense.
Yeah, and the way Aleister Black did it, it wasn't just so over the top, you know? It was like, damn it, you did it. Dream, Velveteen Dream, you know? Yeah, very organic.
And here's another thing, because I'm hearing people complaining about Sullivan talking too much and he should just be the silent monster and all this, but, like... Do you think that it hurts that I think Black is already really in that spot and that they would be better off not having two guys who are, like, really similar in that way? Because I think Aleister Black being a man of few words actually really helps with his character quite a bit. And as I talked about kind of the mind games of that being a guy who doesn't kind of say much. So, like, do you think that they should be just doing the same thing with Sullivan, or do you think that it makes sense that they're kind of going a different way with Sullivan?
I think it makes sense they're going a different way with Sullivan, especially if you look at the big picture is they already have Braun Strowman, who is a man of few words on the main roster. So I don't think you need to have Lars Sullivan. I mean, you're talking about Aleister Black, aping Aleister Black. Well, he definitely, that's one, but he definitely shouldn't be aping, doing identical monster build and push as Braun Strowman either.
You know, that's a good point as well.
Which is the end game is to be on the main roster. Not just the NXT roster. So, if you have the guy doing it's quite giant. There's no reason for Sullivan to do it either. There's just ways about presenting their characters differently. Then we get the four-way match with the girls, Sane, Moon, Royce, and Cross. I gave it 3¼. I liked it. It had big moves. I think Peyton Royce has freaky flexibility. Cross comes across as super intense here. Loved all the saves of the big moves. I thought they did a good job protecting the big moves by actually having saves on the pinfalls. Fun sprint, and I really did like the finish a lot. The only thing, you know, it just felt like whoopee-doo. It's Ember Moon 1. I don't care about her. But I will say the crowd dug it, and help her being from Texas, I think, helped her help babyface her here in this town, in this location. But I don't know if it's going to help her in the grand scheme of things, because she doesn't feel like a top, doesn't feel like the top dog in the women's division. Like Asuka definitely felt like the top dog at times. Charlotte felt like a top dog at times. Bayley felt like she was the best at the time. Sasha, you know, Charlotte. So again, this almost feels. Like, you know, it's great that they NXT was really what ushered in the women's division for the WWE. Now it feels like almost like slim pickings in a way, and it's like you've already hit something that's hot. Now they kind of gotta, I don't know, rediscover themselves or maybe do something different because they already had great workers come through. So I just think it's, and they had the pick of what they had earlier. So they already had the blue chippers really come through. So now it's almost like they got to come up with something else to make it seem more different than the women's they pushed in the past. It's almost like they got to come up with a whole entire different way to present the women on the roster and stuff. So we'll see. What you make of this?
Yeah, I'm with you in a lot of ways on there. I think that the week before on the TV having Ember Moon, it almost feels like they're trying to debut a new version of Ember Moon where she's more of a plucky underdog face. And I think with having Kairi Sane right there, who does the same thing much better, is not smart. And also on top of the fact that, like, she hasn't been presented that way this whole time, it really feels abrupt to kind of throw her into that role. I could see maybe they rushed it because they felt like that the problem was she wasn't going to be taken super seriously as the champion. So they thought, well, let's just play into that and make her like an underdog character. But I don't know that it works for her. The match itself, I think they did a really good job of playing in some kind of psychology and some tropes of a tag match in a four-way setting. That being kind of, there's a lot of stuff with Kairi Sane. It felt like the matchup that you're trying to see is Moon versus Kairi Sane. But a lot of times in one of these kind of thrown together feud tag team matches that you would see in WWE and even in the history of the territories as well, the big matchup that you're kind of saving would be protected by the other members of the teams getting involved. It felt like Peyton Royce played the spoiler a lot of times, keeping you from getting to see the Moon versus Sane match that I think you were supposed to be wanting to see coming out of this. And then the other thing that really felt kind of tag centric was Cross spent a lot of time out on the floor and right at a big lull in the match that felt like the match could start to kind of drag. She came in House of Fire for a big time gear change of the mood of the match, and I think that really helped kind of as almost like a hot tag keep the flow of the match going when it was at a down period. So yeah, I really enjoyed that part. Those parts of it in general I thought were done really well. Other than that, I think there was definitely some good car crashy stuff. There's definitely some good, you know, breaks like you were talking about, people kind of protecting their moves. I think Peyton definitely looked really good here. I think we talked about her being the better wrestler of the two in the Iconic Duo. I mean, she doesn't feel like she's completely off the level of the other girls in this match. She definitely was protected in that, like I said, she played the spoiler. She came in a lot and picked her spots. She was not forced to be kind of the focal point of the match for long periods of time, but I think that she served her role really well. And I think that with time, and you know, the only thing that sucks is the NXT style of training does not lend itself to kind of creativity and learning to work on the fly. But I think if she had more time having matches that she was calling in the ring and kind of learning the psychology of matches and all that, she could actually be pretty soon here, be a pretty competent wrestler. But unfortunately, I think the training style is going to hold her back a little bit in that regard. That said, it waxed and waned at times. It didn't quite have the narrative that I would like. It was a real basic narrative. It's just a four-way fight. But it was good. Asuka coming out to give Moon the title, I felt they were trying to put her over big as the champ, but I think that it kind of outshined her to have Asuka there. It reminded you that she wasn't able to beat Asuka. Asuka almost...
Totally agree.
Asuka had a smile on her face, and I think that the idea was supposed to be that she was kind of endorsing and happy for Moon, but it almost felt condescending, and, oh, here, you can have my trash, I'm done with this. Now that I'm, you know, so I think that sucks. And you say that you're not behind Ember Moon, but I mean, the commentary kept mentioning it so much, you would think that it's, you know, anyone from that entire state automatically loves her because that's her home state. So I would think you love her too, Pete, but I guess not. I guess that doesn't work on you, huh? For me, 3 stars. Like I said, good action. Definitely all 3 girls deserve their spots and where they're at, but and some of it was hurt by booking. Some of it was, I think, hurt just by the setup. And, man, maybe they pulled Asuka faster than they had known that they were going to, and they didn't really have a plan B to make this work more smoothly. But we'll see where they come out of this.
What do you think of Drew McIntyre versus Dean Almas?
The setup, the promo videos for the match really, really helps a lot to make you buy into Almas. I think that they did a great job cutting everything together to really make the match work. Then you get into the actual action of the match, and I think he did a really good job in the beginning telling the story that he's this super athlete. He's really fast. He's strong. He's going to be able to make up this size difference. He's got Zelina helping him out throughout, kind of as a drawing the focus to herself, keeping him focused in the match, interjecting in the match when need be. Just really good stuff all around. Almas looked great here. He's taken huge dives to the floor. He's getting a little cocky and having it cost him at points. McIntyre is phenomenal at having matches that feel like big time epic wars. So by the middle to the end of the match, it really does start to feel like these guys have just been put each other through it. Drew, I don't know if he works super stiff, but everything he does comes across super stiff. He has great matches with other guys who have reputations for working stiff. So it's kind of like he just seems like there's something to his style. He's definitely a big time kind of meat and potatoes, hit you hard kind of guy. So that really worked here with Almas as you're wanting to now see Almas on a different level as not just a pretty boy who wants to party, but he's trying to be a tough guy too. Loved the Rana spots attempted by Zelina. One is just caught and put her down. Second one, she actually hits the Sombra, but can't do it. Claymore and Zelina puts the foot on the rope. Great spots. Protect the babyface champion, but keep the match going. But even at that point, I mean, with something just that kind of textbook, I still wouldn't have predicted what comes next as he hits this big leg hung version of La Sombra. And even Almas looks shocked that he won the title. It felt like it was a shoot. I mean, I really was buying into how shocked he was that like they didn't tell him he was winning the title or something. Cause the look on his face was amazing. Big time win for him. He eventually the realization sets in, and then he starts kind of parading around, showing off with his belt. So great stuff. 3.25 star from me. Good action. Felt like a well earned kind of battle that almost kind of took the title. Even if you think that he cheated in all this, I mean, it took a lot to get through Drew, so he really earned his victory here, even if it was somewhat cheap. And you can start to take him seriously as a guy that maybe he could have beat Drew without the cheating. Maybe he could have, you know, maybe he would have kicked out. Who knows? But you're going to have to now learn to see what's going to happen. And what sucks is, you know, he's that good, but he does also have Zelina in his corner. So he's going to continue to cheat. And you're just going to want to see when does it finally catch up to him. So he's a great kind of beatable champion in the vein of, you know, like the Ric Flair, the guy that you're paying to see because you think, you know, your guy is going to be able to finish him off at some point. There's no way everything can just keep going just right for him to, you know, sneak out a victory every time.
Yeah, you have to remind you of Shawn Michaels and Sherry Martel in a way. I loved how Zelina Vega's Rana failed immediately because Drew is such a big guy. So I liked how she pretty much no-sold it. But it also set up the heat in a way where Cena almost is able to come on it. Loved the shoulder bump by McIntyre to set up the heat. Loved Almas's heat focused on the arm. Loved my McIntyre's hope spots being power moves. Liking Drew respecting the work done on his arm. He's selling it all. There was a lot of great near falls in the match. I absolutely loved the storytelling. I thought it built and built and built, and then the crowd was going nuts for this. I absolutely loved it. And then Almas going over, and it was almost like a babyface reaction of him winning in a way. So I was a little down on it a little bit, but I'm still happy for him, so I get it. And yeah, and heels can be happy too, so I'm all right with that. I give it 4.25. I thought the storytelling was just tremendous. I feel bad for McIntyre being injured and stuff, and I hope he makes a quick comeback. But I mean, that sounds like a torn bicep could be a lot of problems and stuff, and it's a shame because he had this killer match with Almas, and I felt like it was going to be earmarked to the main roster anyway because of his size. But man, I absolutely was blown away by this match with the storytelling and the psychology and the hope spots and the heat and the shine. I thought it was laid out really, really well. And I think Almas and Cena and Selena Vega come across as a big time act. I'm glad that it finally paid off because it felt like Almas was going in the right direction once he turned heel. Then they started making him a loser where he's out partying and he was losing matches. I was getting a little nervous, but it felt like they finally went all 360 on him, and putting him with Vega was the final piece. And now he feels like a really top act in a way. And that leads us into War Games. Okay. I hated the fact it didn't have a roof. I hated the fact that these rules changed. I did not like the fact that there was, in the old War Games, when they had the two rings connected to each other, there was like a little hole where you could stick people's heads in. I didn't like how they had that sealed off. I didn't like the fact you started with three people. And then the light went off, and then the other two people could join, run in. So I didn't like how they did the advantage disadvantage thing. With that said, though, I wish they would just never would have called it War Games. War Games were there because we had a ceiling. It was there to protect it. There was very, very, very rarely were there a lot of weapons used in War Games. Every now and then you'd get a phone or a brass nux or something you could pass through, a telephone or something through. Very, but not like this. This ended up, again, it wasn't as personal. I'm a firm believer as in you don't need, and in today's wrestling environment, a brawl equals using chairs and weapons and stuff. I'd rather just see two people just punch the shit out of each other, bloody each other up. I thought Authors of Pain kind of understood the concept of it, and they felt like they were in War Games. I felt the match went a little too long. There was a lot of convoluted spots that like were eye-rolling for War Games, like the triple, whatever you call it. What do you call the triple-decker suplex?
The Tower of Doom.
Yeah, okay. The Mirror Tower of Doom spot.
Yeah,
don't belong in War Games. But I still enjoyed it for what it was. But it wasn't my War Games. It wasn't my any of my peers' War Games growing up. It didn't have the violence. Yeah, we got some hardway blood. But overall, this felt like something TNA would have done and called it War Games. And actually, this reminded me a lot of the War Games in TNA because I know they had Tower of Doom spots. I know they had weapons involved. I just wish they would have, you know, and then again, it didn't help with the build. As in, you have the Authors of Pain and Roddy Strong kind of thrown together with no rhyme or reason. War Games is about feud-ending, like, feuds of hatred. And I didn't think we that never climaxed on the TV for me. Just even the build, it didn't work for me. You're supposed to have two teams that like, hate each other. Take the Dangerous Alliance versus Sting Squadron, or the Horsemen versus Team Dusty versus America's Teams. I mean, these guys had a rich history of feuding with one another. Here it felt like it was done on the fly real quickly. They started this feud. It's only been I mean, the Ring of Honor guys have only been on the company for maybe 4 months right now or whatever, 3 months. So it felt a little rushed, and it doesn't have the back history to deserve the hatred that it would. This was War Games 2017, or Sports Entertainment's version of War Games. It's not my War Games, but with that said, still enjoyed it enough. Give it 3.5 stars, but it's not War Games, people. What do you think?
I have a lot of the same feelings as you. I give it 3.25. There was like the intro video. I thought they did a really good job, and I wish that like we lived in the world of the intro video, because it felt like they cut that promo to where like having this matchup made sense. But the build and everything else about it, that wasn't true. A lot of it felt thrown together. Like you talk about, they shoehorned it into a place where they thought it made sense, but realistically it should be, as you said, a feud ender and something where the baby faces are triumphant, but because of the setting, because of the situation, because of the new team debuting, you have to have the heels winning, which doesn't feel right to me when it comes to War Games, honestly. The rule changes, the two guys, I think that having two guys enter at the same time really worked in only one setting, and that was with AOP. Obviously, having both of those guys come out at once was the best part of the match. Them throwing everybody around was fucking amazing. And like you said, it really felt like that made sense for War Games, and I totally agree. That felt like War Games. That was a lot of fun, super cool. But in another way, like, it doesn't make any fucking sense, because you wouldn't have an old-school War Games where two guys would come out at the same time. So there is that part of it, too. But clearly that was built for them. I almost thought that they were going to be smart enough to save that for the very end, so that you would end on this climactic, really cool bit of clatter with both members of AOP throwing everybody around. But instead, I think they tried to get too smart, too cute, and say, well, what we'll do is we'll top it with Sanity coming out, and then they're going to add in the Plunder, because they're the agents of chaos. And I would have been a lot better off having them just come in the middle. They come in there, they do some regular kind of heel stuff. You know, what you do is you essentially just have them decide that they're going to team up with Undisputed to beat up Roddy, and that's the story that you tell, I think, that works better as AOP comes in, just destroys everything.
And another thing, they allowed pinfalls in this one, and I think that, again, that's another trope of 2017 and more modern wrestling, where most of these matches are built around kickouts and two counts and stuff. Yep. That I don't think they think their fans can sit through a match where there isn't a lot of kickouts, and which, again, it's not War Games. Is you submit or you surrender. There's no kickouts of pinfalls. Yep. That's not. So I think that also, I thought, cheapened the gimmick in a sense, because they didn't trust their talent to be able to get a personal brawl over. And again, it didn't help with their creativity on building this up either. Sorry, yes. Tim, go on.
No, they were completely right. And here's the thing is, you also got two MMA guys in there who got all these cool submission holds. And you got Roddy Strong, who they haven't really built it up, but he's got that stronghold that he could lock in. And you got that torture crab, and you can make a big deal. And yeah, in my head, this match should have ended with Adam Cole pouring blood, locked in the stronghold. You got AOP on the sides in the other two rings or whatever, throwing around all the members of Sanity and Undisputed, just killing them as Adam Cole has to surrender. And then you get the big win for the Family Man, who got fucked out of the title program with Bobby Roode and all this. You could finally have a nice, solid payoff. But instead, what we get is this weird kind of contrived bullshit where the commentators even have to put it over. Oh, check it out. We're ending with the same three guys who started. You know what I mean? And that shit was so fucking, like, contrived and hokey that somehow, after all this war, it's Eric Young, Adam Cole, and Roddy Strong are still trading back and forth since the beginning of the match. Like, that shit just, it's trying to be too cute. It's trying to polish a turn.
And how you pronounce said it, which makes you wonder, okay, timing's everything. It's too early to beat these guys, so the War Games at this time, it doesn't make sense, okay?
Yeah.
War Games would make sense once Adam Cole is the champion, and if you want to beat him in a War Games to set up a challenger for him, you know? And he's left in a bloody mess against a big ass kicker or whatever, setting up that match. So you can't beat them too soon because of they're the new hot act, new heel act for you. But, yeah, so you don't. So, they, again, what I'm getting at is They should have waited to do War Games at the when it made sense. And they here they did it. They didn't do it here to make sense. They did it because they wanted to do War Games and not when it made the most financial reasoning or made sense for the company.
Yeah, exactly. And it really, yeah, it really affected the match. That said, there's stuff to enjoy here. I loved Roddy kind of playing dress up. It made me think of Dusty Rhodes dressing up like the Legion of Doom. I kind of like that. Him dressing up like AOP was cool. I heard people shit on that, but I thought it was cool. I thought that there were some times in here where Red Dragon looked good working as a team. And then there was also, I think this is the best that Killian Dane has looked in NXT. I thought his heat up times looked good. Love the Michinoku driver on Cole that's driving him into Fish, who's sitting down below him on the failed sunset flip. I thought that was great. So yeah, I thought that there was some stuff to like here, but there was also some issues, and really some major issues. And then the finish, I mean, God, like for the finish of War Games to be, you know, Adam Cole just hits his little shiny whizzy. It's not even a real shining wizard. It's just kind of a diving knee strike to a chair to the head of EY after all this. And it's over. It's just, to me, that feels anticlimactic.
Especially after some of the stuff they did, you know? That makes it even worse.
Exactly.
Because there's a lot more brutal ways to, I mean, yeah, the finish is supposed to be the climax, and that Shining Wizard at worst best looked like a transition during the War Games.
Yep, and another rule change thing that really fucked up the match was the escape the cage, your team is forfeits or whatever.
Yeah.
Rule was such fucking horse shit. Just, if you want to say you can't leave the cage, then leave the roof on.
Again, they can't get their damn weapons in, or other stuff, or they can't do a spot, or they can't do the doom, the stack, or whatever, the Tower of Doom spot.
Yeah.
Less is more sometimes, just because you can't, who gives a shit if they're doing I can tell you, that Tower of Doom spot meant absolutely nothing in that match, honestly.
Meant zero. And it looked fucking stupid when they do the Tower of Doom and Adam Cole is still just sitting there in the cage.
Yeah.
That was so dumb, man. That's just more of that hokum. That's that fucking, this is sports entertainment. These are your WrestleMania moments. It's the stuff I talk about with Marty Scurll, where he does this stuff that you can tell comes right out of the mind of Vince McMahon. I mean, there's just these ideas. Like, the whole company is infected with this trope that this is how wrestling works, and at times it's just disgusting. It's not disgusting. Like, I'm going over the top. I'm almost like Dylan Hale's level of hyperbole here. But it's like, it's annoying because it's just not wrestling. It's sports. It really is sports entertainment. It feels like a melodrama that you'd watch on TV. It's comic books, you know, and I know people compare wrestling to comic books, but it's a bad side of comic books and wrestling. I want to feel somewhat real. I want this to feel somewhat like a sport, like a real fight.
There wasn't such a thing except a WrestleMania moment until like the last 5 or 6 years when I've heard that term, okay?
Yeah.
The first 10 or 15 WrestleManias, those moments were organic, okay? They weren't planned because, we're going to have a WrestleMania moment. Now everyone's trying to get their WrestleMania moment, and it's just... And they're not moments. I mean, they're not organic for the most part. Very rarely is any of it organic. And that's the problem. The things in wrestling, in the history of wrestling, they're at its best when it's organic. And when you try to make something not organic, it usually blows up in your face and shits down your throat. And that's that. But with that said, I enjoyed the show a lot. I thought from top to bottom I had a good show. I really loved the McIntyre Almas. I thought Lars Sullivan looked good coming out of the show. Thought Velveteen Dream and Aleister Black had a great, great match. And again, that felt organic again. Didn't feel contrived at all. That felt like a WrestleMania moment. I had to give it a thumbs up, and I love the show, man. What about you?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, big time thumbs up. Love the show. Thought it had some really great stuff. High pace action. Really cool. And I think, you know, some people were into the War Games. I agree. It was too long, too much. But some people probably really liked it. It'd probably be one of their favorite matches of the year. That's cool. Not necessarily for me, but so much good coming out of this. Really interested to see where they go with Almas as champion. Just because they don't have a lot of built-up baby faces to feud with a heel like him right now. So we'll see where they go, especially, you know, you got Adam Cole looming in the distance. And I'm wondering where they go. So it's exciting coming out of it. You know, you got plenty of guys who came out of this looking even hotter than they were going into it. So it's definitely an easy thumbs-up show.
Yeah, you know, it's weird that they don't have a whole bunch of baby faces lined up for I mean, I guess you have Gargano in a way. I guess Roddy Strong in a way, but these guys have been beat so often on TV. Yeah, it makes you wonder where they're going to go.
Yeah, exactly. Did you watch the next episode that's like the kind of recap episode?
No, I usually don't because it's usually recap along with matches I didn't really care about.
Right.
Even though I should watch Gargano Dunn, no, have you?
Yeah, I'd recommend going and watching the Gargano-Dunn match. Even the Ruby Riott versus Sonya Deville match was pretty good. Both girls wrestled like they knew they were going to the main roster soon because they kind of gave it their all here in NXT before they were leaving.
Okay.
And then there was a lot of there's, you know, promos and stuff like that, but nothing too earth-shattering that needs to be watched. But it's definitely pretty interesting to think about where they're going to next here. With that and the Gargano Dunn match is definitely worth watching.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't think they're expecting Drew to get hurt, so I'm assuming they were penciling Drew and Cien Almas for another show eventually. So I don't know, you know, it's easy to give them feed them, but you know, you don't want to beat Strong again. I don't think, you know, yeah, it's been beat all the time.
Right.
Same with Gargano. So
yeah, you got Gargano, you got Strong, you got maybe.
I mean, I guess you could go Black, but Black. I don't want to see him beat Black either.
Yeah, you got Hero, but I mean, Hero is kind of treated like nothing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would take some rehab.
Yeah.
It would, but I think that story could work. Honestly, if they build it around the idea that Zelina is picking out weak challengers, and you could pick out someone like a Hero and say like, oh. You know, she disingenuously says, like, oh, I think he deserves a title shot because he's been grinding for so long and this and that. And then you rehab Hero a little bit, you know. I think you could maybe pull off some stuff like that. But it's definitely going to be interesting to see where they go.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right, man. Do you have anything you want to talk about before we head out?
No, same old, same old. Just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead. Check out the podcast. And that's it for now.
Yeah, that sounds about me. Except that mine's Tidy No Wrestling. And have a great week. We'll see you next week. Enjoy some wrestling.
Don't dance 'cause I want to.